You're listening to Mr. Open Banking, the only podcast dedicated to exploring the open banking movement. Whether you're a financial expert, banking executive, or everyday consumer, open banking affects everyone and will change the way we interact with our money. I'm A.L. Savan, your host. This episode is brought to you by Ozone API, unlocking the power of open finance all over the world. Much like biological evolution, the evolution of open banking is largely influenced by its environment. Where there are extreme environmental conditions, such as massive wealth inequality or a collapse of trust in the financial system, open banking thrives, built upon the promise of a better way. On the other hand, in places where the environment is more stable, more predictable, open banking tends to wither, often painted as an unnecessary risk. Nowhere has that been more true than in Canada, a place famous for being risk-averse. The major banks in Canada, the infamous Big Five, often join hands in holding safety and soundness above all other principles. The government usually tends to agree. Unfortunately for Canada, open banking is a global wave, one that will hit them, whether they like it or not. Will they be ready? Or will they be left behind? This is a region I know something about, because I call it home. Before I was Mr. Open Banking, I was a software architect at a major Canadian bank for 15 years. In my time there, I learned all about the strengths and weaknesses of a large financial institution, and how difficult it can be for them to cope with technological change. But, as has happened before, with the web, with mobile, open banking gives them no choice. Astute regular listeners will have noticed that last season was only 7 episodes instead of the usual 8. That's because our guest for the 8th episode was unable to join due to his contract with the Canadian Department of Finance being extended through to the end of the year. Thankfully, we now have him back to open Season 5 of Mr. Open Banking. Abraham Tatchian is the former open banking lead for all of Canada. In March of 2022, he was appointed by the Canadian Department of Finance to lead the development of a national open banking framework. And for the last 2 years, he has been doing just that, aligning Canadian bankers, fintechs, regulators, and other stakeholders around a common vision for the country's financial future. Prior to taking on the role of Canada's open banking lead, Abraham was the director of the financial services practice at PwC, where he supported early open banking efforts. But his experience is not limited to Canada. Before joining PwC, he was one of the founders of a digital bank in Hong Kong, and was director of digital banking for Standard Chartered in Singapore, giving him a uniquely international perspective. As a common law and civil law qualified lawyer, he brings a multidisciplinary approach that bridges the gap between banking, technology, and law. A frequent speaker at industry events, Abraham focuses on the evolution of financial services, covering topics such as challenger banks, RegTech, and his favorite, open banking. Abraham, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, AL.
The Canadian open banking story actually started a lot earlier than most people think. The government had been talking about open banking as early as 2017, while you were still in Singapore. How did your work over there influence what you would come to eventually do back home?
Yeah, that's a great question, AL. I'll be honest, I never set out to be in open banking, have anything to do with it up until a fateful day where my boss tapped me on my shoulder and said, hey, look, there's a meeting at the regulator to discuss open banking. Would you be interested? And I said, absolutely. And as soon as he walked away, I jumped on the internet and looked up what the heck is open banking. That was a great opportunity to get into this space. And I recall in our first discussions, touching on a lot of the issues that eventually we had to iron out here in Canada. We had an opportunity to do a lot of work across jurisdictions. From being on the bank side, it gave me the opportunity to identify the major issues that a financial institution would have being a member of a data sharing ecosystem focused on Singapore and Hong Kong. So from the early days, I qualify that my time there as training for open banking before moving back to Canada.
The watershed moment for open banking in Canada was the Department of Finance publishing a report entitled A Review into the Merits of Open Banking in early 2019. How did you react when you first read that report?
It was very encouraging. At the time, I was preparing to move back to Canada, and just to see that from a financial policy perspective, that this topic was on top of mind for the government. So from a consumer perspective, I was very enthusiastic about it. I like to say I'm a voracious consumer. This gave me an indication that soon enough, there'll be something in Canada that'll help me get the best deals for myself. From a professional perspective, look, I think you always need to have a certain degree of academic interests, and open banking was always that element for me. Now, I had no idea how the system would evolve and what my participation would be, but from a personal and professional perspective, I found it very encouraging in the sense that it was the first steps towards an actual framework.
2019, you're still in Asia. In 2020, you moved back to Toronto and worked for PwC. That period from 2019 to 2022 for Canadian open banking was formative, but some would say slow, a big reason being the pandemic. Let's talk about those years. What was the Advisory Committee on Open Banking, and what was the final report?
So the Advisory Committee was essentially a committee that was put together to advise the government on how to progress and develop an open banking system in Canada. And it had a variety of expertise on it from the legal perspective, from the entrepreneurial perspective, as well as from the banking perspective. So it was quite a robust cast of professionals that were advising the government and essentially reporting on the challenges that they heard from the industry and how to move this forward. That culminated into an advisory committee report that was released on August 4th, 2021. I'll never forget the date because it was 2 days before my birthday. The biggest takeaways for me at the time was a recommendation around governance in the sense that a new entity would be necessary. There was a recommendation around an open banking lead. Little did I know then, that would eventually become me. There was very good information, a lot of good insight with respect to the scope of the system in the sense of who should be part of the open banking system in Canada, and importantly, what information should they share. So a lot of detail with respect to that eventually became a roadmap for my work.
It was in this period that Canada first expressed its displeasure with the term open banking, instead calling it consumer-directed finance. Even today, our government calls it consumer-driven banking. Why so much wrangling over the name?
I think from a marketing perspective, I think the association of the term open with anything to do with financial services may give certain people the inclination that their information is out in the public, that it's a free-for-all. That couldn't be further from the truth. I think it was wise to change the terminology to focus more on a consumer's empowering capabilities as opposed to focus on a term that was predominantly used in the industry. It's very much a business term. I think we did ourselves a favor in terms of reshaping the terminology around open banking and focusing more on the consumer, a term that reflects the fact that this system attempts to empower them and give them complete control over their financial data. I think there was also some surveys done, and the results were not very promising about how people felt with the term open banking, not the enabling capabilities. But I think it was a good idea to rephrase the term.
The final report, finally published in August of 2021, identified as one of the first steps the appointment of an open banking lead. As you said, on March 22, 2022, the government announced it was you, Abraham Tachyan. Tell us the story of how that happened.
I was very happy to be even in consideration. I remember as I was reading the report and seeing this reference to an open banking lead for the first time, the recommendation, I was thinking to myself, what a cool job. I think I could do it. So when we started having a conversation about me potentially taking on the role, it was a validation in terms of all the efforts that I put in throughout my career. Some of the risks I had taken to move to the other part of the world. To this day, I look back on the journey and I still can't believe that I was given the role, and I still can't believe how much we delivered throughout that time.
Among other things, the final report laid out a clear schedule for open banking implementation, including a live date of January 2023, just 10 months after you joined. Ambitious, even if you account for the delay between the report being published and you being selected as lead. What did you think of that date going in?
Look, I knew it was going to be a challenging date only because of the fact that the advisory committee report dated 2021. The expectation was you would have an open banking lead in place relatively fast, and they would begin their 18-month term. And unfortunately, I only started my term almost a year later. So off the bat, that challenging timeline, the 2023 date became even more challenging. But my goal was never to rush this. My goal was never to try to get to the finish line as soon as possible. Because I think when you're building a system, there's an acknowledgement that a data ecosystem is not something you could do overnight and you can't cut corners. So my focus was predominantly on making sure that what I was recommending to the government in terms of the output as the open banking lead was complete, captured every single element, and addressed all the issues that I was hearing from stakeholders that we were discussing with, be it banks, consumer agencies, regulators, credit unions, fintechs, you name it. We had a very broad group of stakeholders with who we consulted. I was never concerned with respect to meeting that timeline. My focus initially was to make sure that we were giving a complete system to the government.
So let's talk about that, the work itself. Tell us how you broke the problem down. How did you structure the work? How did you employ the working groups mentioned in the final report?
That was quite a bit of work. I did not anticipate the amount of lift required, but I'm glad we went through it because it was necessary to get to where we are. Essentially, the advisory committee report was a roadmap, which was something that I tried to stick to as much as I could. And in the roadmap, there was discussions around some fundamental elements around open banking, what you absolutely need to set up the system, according to the advisory committee. Based on that approach, I built up our open banking working groups. So we split them into four groups. One group addressed accreditation issues. Essentially, if you're not a bank or if you're not a credit union, what are the requirements that you'll have to fulfill to be able to access the open banking system and have access to consumer permission data? The next point was on privacy. Now, the challenge with privacy was making sure that we weren't recreating additional privacy requirements, because we have privacy legislation in Canada. So I had to make sure that we weren't creating duplicative requirements and creating a parallel privacy system. So that working group focused on more of the practical considerations related to privacy. Essentially, how do you visualize the consent process? How many screens do you go through? What type of information does a consumer have to be presented with? And how are they consenting to it? We had a security working group, which focused on mitigating the risks associated with open banking. And finally, everybody's favorite topic, liability. Who's on the hook for something going wrong when inevitably it does? So we split it into those four working groups. In addition to those, we had a steering committee that invited every single one of the stakeholders from those working groups into a general discussion to understand the progress of the project and essentially how it's advancing.
Are there any decisions or outcomes that are especially unique or that you're especially proud of?
I'm proud of all the work. It's hard to ask me to pick one thing out. I feel like open banking, the work I did was my baby. But I do think that one of the major takeaways on open banking with respect to the government's decision, as well as the views I shared throughout my term, is with respect to governance. For a while, as the system was being developed in Canada and how it was being portrayed as an upcoming made in Canada system, there was discussions around who would have oversight of the system. Would this be an industry-driven model where essentially the industry players determine the rules of the game? Or is this a government-led model with a degree of participation from the government? And so midway through the term, as we had done a lot of the consultations, we had a lot of one-on-one discussions, and we had considered the uniqueness of the system as it will be implemented in Canada, it became pretty clear that the governance of the system cannot be managed by the industry. It's not the industry's responsibility to determine the rules by which consumers share their data. This is a fundamental right and a right that can only be governed by the government. Of course, there was other deciding factors behind that, the primary one being the fact that Canada has a distribution of powers when it comes to the oversight of the financial system. And by that, I mean banks are federally regulated, whereas provinces have oversight over credit unions. Now, I was conscious that we were developing a federal system, but I wanted to avoid having a fragmented model where a Canadian that does business with a credit union can't participate in the system. So we needed to design a governance system that was inclusive of both the federal and the provincial powers. Only governments can work together to make sure that happens, not the industry. It's not the industry's job to be working with provincial regulators to make sure we reached out outcomes. So that was a major deciding factor in terms of determining that the oversight of the system had to be managed by the government.
You've touched on it already, but let's explore thorny problems like the relationship to credit unions or federalization across provinces. Are there any other thorny problems that jump out at you, perhaps liability?
If you would place yourself in the beginning of the conversation around open banking in Canada from a few years back, 2017, 2018, look, I think the general sentiment would be more focused on doom and gloom, all the ways that open banking is going to create risk for the Canadian financial system, how it's going to bring it down, that type of messaging. But I think as the system progressed, as the government started to get more and more involved and show its intent to bring some form of open banking to Canada, I think that mindset shifted from the doom and gloom to opportunities in the sense that I think stakeholders came to admission that, look, one way or another, this is going to happen. We need to get on board. We need to figure out how we can participate in the system, how we can empower our consumers, and how we can take advantage of this for our own business. Now, as that shift was happening, I think the natural progression is to sit down and figure out, okay, what is it in open banking that is a major concern for me? And liability was one of those issues, particularly for incumbents, organizations, banks, let's say, that are holding an individual's data. And the fear around that was, what happens when I pass the data on to another counterparty, whether it's a bank, a credit union, or a fintech? Who's on the hook if there's a data breach? So this was a very poignant question, and that's why we dedicated one of the working streams specifically to address that. I'd say it was one of the hottest topics. There was also the issue around technical standards. There was an admission from early on that we need to endorse a technical standard. The advisory committee's report did us a favor in terms of highlighting the importance of a technical standard. Unfortunately, it didn't name one. It acknowledged that there's industry efforts and talks about the pros and cons of having one versus multiple standards. But from my experience working in the industry, as well as seeing the experience of other jurisdictions, it became crystal clear to me that you need a single technical standard to ensure repetitiveness, consistency, and ease of integration across the industry. So that was another topic that needed to be ironed out. The advisory committee also did us a favor in terms of listing certain principles that a technical standard had to fulfill. And that was another way to allow us to progress the work. So I think these were the major topics in addition to the issues that we addressed in the working groups.
Since the beginning, which was around 2017, Canada's open banking journey has been defined by peaks and valleys. Bright spots include the release of the original Merits of Open Banking paper, the establishment of the advisory committee, and, of course, Abraham's appointment as open banking lead. Low points include missed deadlines, broken promises, and years of little to no progress. So much so that even the regular press started reporting on the constant delays. Through it all, Abraham and his team have soldiered on. The four working groups he created to cover accreditation, privacy, security, and liability engaged with stakeholders of all stripes. The finished product, completed at the end of last year, presents all that accumulated knowledge in a handbook, a guide, an encyclopedia on how to best implement open banking. Along the way, certain decisions have been made that Canada should lean towards government-led rather than market-driven, that distribution of power across provinces remains paramount, and that the Big Five need to play fair. Part of Abraham's role has been capturing those decisions in a way that makes them stick. Fear in the challenger part of the industry started to emerge that open banking was going to be usurped by the infamous Canadian banking oligopoly known as the Big Five. For many, that fear still exists today. Can you speak to that a bit? How do you ensure all stakeholders have a say and that you achieve the goal of a level playing field?
It comes at a couple of angles. First one being governance. I mentioned earlier that my thinking and my view is that the system has to be overseen by the government, but that's not an exclusive responsibility. I think it's incumbent upon the government to make sure that they have a continuous dialogue with the industry. There will be issues. Anytime you implement a major technological innovative project, surely something's going to go wrong. Surely there's going to be some teething pains, and open banking won't be any different. It's important for the government to maintain the dialogue with the industry to make sure they see where the challenges are coming from and they can take remedial action. Now, coming back to your question with respect to dominant voices, that's one way of addressing it. If the government maintains a continuous pipeline of discussions with the industry, I think we can identify issues early on and address them. Going back to my work, I was conscious about that as well as we were setting up the working groups. We purposely kept them small. You cannot have productive conversations with 100 people on the line. And we made sure we maintained equal representation in the sense that we tried to make sure that we had the same amount of banks, credit unions, and fintechs, and where available consumer agencies to be part of that, just to make sure that no single organization was dominating the conversation.
The U.S. has also begun to move towards regulated open banking. But the rhetoric surrounding their efforts is quite different. Director Chopra of the U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau warns incumbents against, quote, rent-seeking and weaponization. Why is the messaging so different here? And more generally, how do you see the relationship between Canadian and American open banking?
I think the fundamental element there is with respect to policy objectives. I've looked at what other jurisdictions have done very closely. I think one person told me that we're conducting some sort of forensic analysis of open banking, a cross-jurisdictional one. I took a lot of inspiration from what other jurisdictions have done, from the implementation perspective, from the slip-ups, and from successes, for a couple of reasons. Number one, look, there's an acknowledgement here that our system is behind others, but no one's gotten it perfect. So I've tried to learn about the hang-ups elsewhere and try to not make the same mistakes here. So that was one element of it. But another takeaway was with respect to the policy objectives. I think it's all fair and good to say we can look at other jurisdictions and simply implement the same. There's stuff you have to be very careful about when you do that. And the policy objectives behind those systems is the major consideration. Now, if you look at the UK and Australia, I think some of the leading jurisdictions, the policy drivers for implementing those systems are quite different from Canada in the sense that in those countries, open banking is developing in the backdrop of certain financial institutions behaving poorly, whether it's in Australia with the Royal Commission or in the UK with respect to bank bailouts. That's not poor behavior. I'm just putting it in terms of the context that led to the policy decisions to implement open banking. Coming back to Canada here, we never had those issues. We're not trying to redress market behavior here. What we were trying to do was implement a system that empowers the consumer. Our primary focus is that, to empower consumer with utter control over their data. Now, those are also outputs of other jurisdictions, but the genesis is different. And the genesis is essentially the policy objectives.
You mentioned Australia and the UK, but let's double-click on the US. How do you see our approach or policy objectives comparing or contrasting to the US?
I think in both cases, the consumer is the prime driver for the policy objectives. I think for a few years, the US was held up by certain industry stakeholders as a model for a market-driven approach, in the sense that the government did not intervene in open banking or data sharing, if you'd like. Essentially, the industry was free to develop their own rules. And after a few years, it became quite obvious that the consumer was not coming out on top in the system. The challenges for system participants to be able to access consumer data were just increasing. It was becoming increasingly difficult to empower consumers. I think it's important to note that shift in thinking aligned with the Canadian version in the sense that we've always been consumer-focused here, and the intervention of the CFPB to announce that they're developing rules was also driven by that, in the sense that the market was not properly enabling consumers, empowering consumers. So although the thinking around their open banking system may be different, I think we're aligned in the sense that our objective is to empower consumers.
The unfortunate reality is that since taking on the role, you and your team have suffered no shortage of criticism. The Toronto Star, National Post, Globe and Mail all published pieces about broken promises, ongoing delays, and Canada falling behind. Were the critics justified?
Look, I never spend any time or much attention to what journalists thought about this project. I respect their roles. I respect their responsibilities in a democracy. But I think if I had, it would have distracted me from my work. as I mentioned earlier, my primary focus was not getting to the line as soon as possible. My primary focus was making sure that we were delivering something that was robust, complete, and can evolve into later stages of other systems. So I was much more focused on getting it right than pushing this through as fast as we could. Now, thankfully, because of the quality of the work, because of the quality of the expertise within finance and the countless hours that we put into it, we got the job done. We've got the job done very well. I was never motivated to justify the work we were doing or respond to journalists. I never paid attention to that thing. That was just a distraction for me.
Despite all the challenges and criticism, you put in the work and produced a finished product, what you've called a handbook on how to implement open banking. Can you speak a bit to that finished product?
We had the benefit of many years of consultations before me. We had the benefit of an advisory committee report that held their own working group discussions and their own research. And between that, between the engagements I did within the working groups and outside of them, between the discussions we had with my counterparts in other jurisdictions, and just general industry developments, I'm confident that we addressed every single major fundamental element to set up an open banking system in Canada. As I mentioned, the working groups were a very good start. There was other work that was being done in parallel to those with respect to the technical standard, with respect to the governance of the system. And all those are captured in terms of the work I did, which were reflective of all the discussions we had.
Finally, on November 22nd, 2023, as part of the fall economic statement, Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland outlined her plan to deliver consumer-driven banking, adding that it would have a place in the 2024 federal budget. How did you feel when you saw that?
I'll never forget that day. For a couple of reasons, it was, number one, a validation of all the work that we had done between myself and the team, as well as all the stakeholders. I think oftentimes we forget that these people that joined our working groups, that contributed, had day jobs. It was a validation of all the effort that had gone in developing the system. I think it was also unique in terms of the specificity, in terms of the information the government disclosed in the fall economic statement with certain decisions and outlining when Canadians can hear more about it and dates that we can work towards. But to your question, Eyal, it was genuinely one of the greatest days professionally that I've witnessed.
What does the government need to do next to make it happen?
I think the government's taking the steps to make it happen. I think the fall economic statement was a major one. We also have the benefit of the industry starting to move. I think there's a misconception that when open banking goes live in Canada, it's a switch and everybody's going to be scrambling to be ready for it. There might be some of that to a certain degree, but we also have the benefit of being an ecosystem that's been trying to prepare for this for many years. There's a form of open banking that's enabled via screen scraping. It's not the best way of doing it, but you've got the muscle memory already in place that organizations have been developing over the last couple of years. So I think we're on the right path, and I think the government, starting with the fall economic statement, is taking steps to making this a reality in Canada.
You say that the market has already started building some muscle memory for open banking. Can you elaborate on what they've been doing?
The market's been getting ready. Again, as I mentioned, they haven't been resting on their laurels. They haven't just been studying this. I think if you scan the market, you could see pockets of capabilities that have been developing within banks, credit unions, and fintechs, be it from a strategic perspective, getting ready from a tech perspective. There's a lot of good pockets of work that's already there. So I think we're already on that path. I don't think that we're behind in terms of preparedness. I think obviously there's going to be some efforts that will have to be put in for full readiness, but we have the advantage of seeing what's worked elsewhere and import some of those practices here. And I think you have that already in the market.
Let's close with some lessons learned. On Mr. Open Banking, we try to cover as many different regions as we can, often unpacking the learnings. What lessons could other regions learn from your experience in Canada?
Well, that's the first I hear that question posed. It's typically the other way around in terms of what did you learn from others. Look, I think what we can learn is the degree of engagement and the speed at which we conducted it here in Canada. If memory serves, the majority of our working group consultations were done by the end of 2022. I think we had just a handful left. Now, to put that into context, you've got four working groups. I think each met for about six different occasions, about 3 hours each. Consider the amount of materials and preparation that went into that over the span of a couple of months. I think that degree of engagement, that degree of transparency is something that could be very beneficial to other jurisdictions in order for a project like this to gain credibility with stakeholders that have to contribute to it, as well as consumers that will eventually be the beneficiaries of it.
Why open banking? You even considered focusing on the payment side, where Canada is also busy modernizing and regulating. What made you ultimately pick open banking instead?
My practice is focused on payments. My day-to-day today is on payments, and I see open banking as an intricate part of that. I've always been of the view that the capability that moves the needle forward when it comes to open banking is from a payments perspective, from payment initiation, from being able to do something with the information in the account that you'll have access to via your consumer's permission. So I see them as very intertwined, related disciplines, if you like. I don't think open banking exists on an island as a separate discipline. I think it's an enabling technology. It's an enabling concept to many other financial services that we have, be it payments or wealth management or you name it. I don't think I chose one or the other. I think I've stayed true to my general banking practice. It's just open banking is an enabler that contributes to many financial services. I think whatever you do in terms of your day-to-day job, in terms of your career, you need to have a bit of academic curiosity. I think open banking fulfills that for me. The other element of it is, more selfishly speaking, to have any impact, any contribution on the development of financial services in Canada, as minute as it is, as minute as mine has been, is really humbling. It's really something that I've been very proud of, just to have been given this opportunity. So I'm drawn by how this empowers consumers, the contribution to our financial system, the innovation that it'll introduce in Canada, and importantly, our global competitiveness. I think you rarely come across a financial project that has all these angles, and I suspect that I'll be in this space for a while.
Abraham, where can our guests find out more about you and the work you're doing with PwC today?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me at the many conferences I participate in. I'm easily reachable. I'm not hard to find.
Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a long time coming, but well worth the wait.
Thanks for having me, Al.
On March 26th, 2024, the Bank of Canada warned that the country is facing a productivity emergency caused by low investment in R&D, training, and innovation. In terms of trade, investment capital, and intellectual property, Canada continues to fall behind its G7 peers. As the world becomes more and more driven by technological innovation, safety and soundness seem to be falling short. Open banking has been no exception. Over the last several years, complacent incumbents and risk-averse regulators have been using stability as a reason not to move forward. Fortunately, this has started to change. Today, most players, government and market alike, now recognize that open banking is the beginning of a much larger story, leading to a whole new segment of innovation and skilled opportunities as Canada begins to build its own version of digital public infrastructure. As you've heard, the most recent chapter in this story happened on November 22, 2023, when the federal government released their fall economic statement, committing to a budget for consumer-driven banking. The details for the budget were announced on April 16th, after this episode was recorded. The community waits, with fingers crossed. The pressure to make progress is high, and the road ahead will not be a smooth one. But if we do it right, it will become the foundation for a more prosperous, more productive, more competitive Canada for generations to come. As proud Canadians, Abraham and I are optimistic. We believe that the future of Canada is bright, because the future of Canada is open. Thanks for listening to Mr. Open Banking, the podcast that explores the ongoing evolution of open banking and its impact on our lives. Make no mistake, the rise of open banking is going to change financial services forever, and we will be covering that story every step of the way. This is your host, A.L. Savan. Until next time. This episode of Mr. Open Banking was made possible by Ozone API, providers of the only API platform that supports every open banking standard in the world, unlocking the power of open finance. To learn more, visit ozoneapi.com.